the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Mary McKeown and Cal Thomas are with us, but let's start by hearing the White House Trade Counselor, Peter Navarro, on Fox News at the weekend when he was asked about a poll which showed two-thirds of Americans believe that tariffs will increase the prices they pay.
Trust in Trump. We have the example from the first term. We know that we imposed historically high tariffs on China. We imposed aluminum and steel tariffs. We imposed on washing machines, on solar. And all we got out of that, Shannon, all we got out of that was prosperity and price stability. And the reason why we're not going to see inflation is because the foreigners are going to eat most of it. They have to. We're the biggest market in the world, Shannon, and they have to be here. They have to be here. And so they're going to cut their prices to absorb that. But the bigger picture here is restoring the American manufacturing base.
You heard Lucas's reporting there where the president says he doesn't care if the prices go up on U.S. cars. So what's the message to the U.S. consumer?
The message is that tariffs are tax cuts, tariffs are jobs, tariffs are national security, tariffs are great for America, tariffs will make America great again.
Cal Thomas, tariffs are not tax cuts. And there is so much there to take issue with in Peter Navarro's comments. And how is America going to react to the fact that the foreigners will not eat it, as Navarro says, that the things you import are going to become more expensive because Donald Trump has decided they'll be more expensive?
Well, first, I'd like to wish you and Marianne and all of the listeners a happy April Fool's Day, especially to those who think I am one. I'm not an economist, Matt, and he is right. Navarro is right that tariffs during Trump's first term did produce a stock market that went up. The market is up again today, although waiting for a so-called Liberation Day tomorrow, where Trump is actually going to announce which tariffs he's going to impose on which country and which products. He said yesterday during a meeting in the Oval Office yesterday afternoon that some people would like them, implying that they would be lower than predicted. He had a conversation with a new Canadian prime minister also yesterday. He said that went very, very well, and he is anticipating some kind of an agreement on the fentanyl coming across the border. So all of this is whistling past the cemetery at the moment. 2025 is not 2020, and we'll have to see how this works out. I don't think anybody can predict it accurately at this point.
Well, I think actually you can predict quite a few things accurately because you can look at economic history and you could look at the impact that tariffs have and you look at the way that they're applied and you will see that it causes disruption and that price increases happen in the country that imposes the tariffs on the imports coming in. Mary McKeown. Sorry, Cal, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I just wanted to add something that Trump's objective here is to get more people to buy American cars, which will produce more revenue and taxes for the government. But it's also to get some of these foreign countries who have been imposing tariffs way out of proportion to ours, like India, for example, 100% tariffs on some American goods. Now, whether that works out or not, we're about to find out. I don't think we're going to get any clear message on this until we find out tomorrow what his announcement is.
Well, that's assuming it's going to be clear, because a lot of things are very unclear in the way announcements get made on a regular basis. But also, just before I go to Marion, Navarro there talking about increasing the manufacturing base in the United States. But where are you going to get the workers if you're kicking immigrants out? Because unemployment in the United States is down at 4.4%. There's about 9 million vacancies for jobs in the United States at present. If the companies are forced to open up manufacturing facilities, additional ones in the United States, who's going to staff them?
Well, I don't think you're going to find people who are coming into this country illegally talented to be on production lines and making engines and fitting in automatic windshield wipers and the rest. We'll have to see about that. A lot of this is speculation. A lot of it is being seen through the prism of whatever political persuasion you have to be, a political party you have to be a member of. So I'm not willing to predict how this is going to work out. I'm willing to wait and see what happens. Remember that it took Ronald Reagan 2 years to turn the economy around. I don't think it's going to take that long for Trump, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, you see, it's a question of does the economy need to be turned around? Because if you're turning around the existing economy, you're going to be turning it into recession. There's a big difference. Marianne McKeown, what's your assessment of this?
Wow, I'm just, I think just to there are so many things here, but let's just focus in on one. Cal, you mentioned cars and that Trump wants cars made in America. There is no such thing as an American-made car anymore. All of these parts come in and some of them are assembled. They're put together. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. They get bits in from China or Canada or Mexico or wherever, and then they do put them into a car in American plants, but there's no such thing as an American-made car. So all of these parts will have tariffs on them wherever they're coming from, and there have been assessments by non-political groups, by conservative economists, in fact, who have said that the price of a truck, which is now about 50 grand and upwards, will go up by between $10,000 and $15,000 as a result of these tariffs. The other countries are not going to eat this. That just isn't how it works. Navarro is talking nonsense. And I think that the other big problem we have here is that Trump is running the government and he's running the presidency like it's an extension of The Apprentice, like it's some kind of reality TV show where you have a cliffhanger every week. Wait and see, wait and see. Who will I tariff? Who will I not? Businesses crave certainty. Investors crave certainty. They don't want an economy and an environment where week to week everything changes on a whim. You cannot invest and create jobs in that kind of an environment. It is crazy. The whole thing is just bonkers. And trying to get his minions around him to pretend it's a great idea is frankly laughable. And it's embarrassing for people who know better to have to go on TV and to have to go speak to journalists and try to defend this nonsense. So, you know, we'll see what Liberation Day brings, but I'm really sceptical. And it is going to, and that, and the combination of, as you said, Matt, there are 9 million empty jobs. The prices, you know, you cannot, I'll give you an example in California at the moment. After the fires, there are no construction workers. They cannot start rebuilding because there's a massive scarcity of basic construction workers who used to do the unskilled work because a lot of them are disappearing or self-deporting or they're afraid to take on jobs. So you combine soaring tariffs, the impacts of those, a trade war, and an absolute dearth of key workers in construction and agriculture and manufacturing, and you just have a recipe for chaos.
Of course, TDS now stands for Tariff Derangement Syndrome. Cal, tell me about the elections that are taking place today in Florida and Wisconsin and the particular significance of those.
Well, it's all about the two things, Matt. It's about the House Republican majority, whether it will remain in Republican hands or switch to the Democrats. The two races in Florida seem to be pretty safe, especially one of them. Very, very strong Trump reelection margins. The one in Wisconsin is more interesting, I think, because it's about a Supreme Court justice. Right now, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin has a Democrat majority, and the reason this is important is because the Supreme Court in the state of Wisconsin gets to redistrict, meaning draw lines where members of Congress are elected either in Democrat or mostly Republican areas. So there's a lot of outside money, millions of dollars that have come into Wisconsin for this seemingly insignificant but politically significant election. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that turns out. Once again, it's all about the balance of power in the House of Representatives. Republicans now only have about a three or four vote majority in the House.
But Marianne, tell me more about Wisconsin, particularly because of Elon Musk pouring money into trying to support a Republican candidate. And again, trying to buy individual voters.
Yeah, and you know, I just everything Cal said is spot on, but Wisconsin is fascinating because a couple of years back in a race that was so bitterly fought, another Supreme Court race, that was when the Liberals flipped. The court had been, so the Liberals took a majority there and the Conservatives did everything they could to stop it. Now this time it's like it's playing out again. Susan Crawford does seem to be a stronger candidate, but Elon Musk has pumped about, I think it was about $26 million last that I checked into this race. It is to do with redistricting, but it's also to do with abortion rights as well. And that will determine, and it will also determine things like collective bargaining rights, labour laws. Wisconsin has become increasingly conservative over the past decade or two, and a lot of that is to do with redistricting. And now this court wants to make sure that the Republican Party, I should say, and the conservative majority want to make sure that they, through redistricting, that it stays a conservative state, that it flips permanently red. And Elon Musk is in there for precisely that reason, meddling around again. But, you know, I think people are getting a bit sick of Elon Musk at this stage and his attempts to subvert democracy, which is precisely what he's doing. It's up to the voters to decide.
Carl, Stephen Wexford wants me to ask you, about Donald Trump's performance in his first presidency economically when he added $8.4 trillion to the deficit. Do you think, does Donald Trump actually know what he's doing when it comes to economics?
Well, that's true. And I would say that the stock market certainly went up significantly. Certainly retirees who cast a lot of ballots in the last election for Trump are very happy with that. The market is up again today, waiting again for what is going to happen tomorrow on tariffs. But on average, for the last 40, 50 years, the market has gone up 10% on average every year. So I think you better not look at the economy as a snapshot, but as a longer-range investment tool.
Well, Carl, I certainly wouldn't be looking at one day in the stock market when you consider how much stocks went down in the first quarter of the year. Another listener has a question for you, Carl. This is Andy, who wants me to ask you about Ron DeSantis in Florida ripping apart child labour laws to fill the deficit of migrant workers being deported. When I saw the story a couple of days ago, I actually thought that was a premature April Fool's joke. The idea that 14-year-olds can now be allowed to work overnight to fill the gaps left by the deportation of migrant workers.
Yeah, I'd be totally opposed to that, Matt. The reason we have child labor laws in this country is to protect children from exactly that practice. I hope that saner heads prevail and that if that is a policy that is being considered or enacted, that it be stopped and overturned.
Okay, Marion, what about the potential of Donald Trump being in office, not just for the next 4 years, but for 8 years? Is he really serious about that? Or is this a ploy to try and make sure that the second part of this term, after his first 2 years are gone, won't be sort of lame duck territory, create the impression that he might stay on so that people are taken more seriously in the last 2 years? Or could it be that he really does want to be president for life?
I think both of those things can be true at the same time, but I think the main reason he's doing this at the moment, and again, we all as journalists tend to fall for it, he's desperate to distract from the Signal scandal, from the debacle of Pete Hegseth and Mike Waltz, his defense secretary, national security advisor, like a couple of teenage boys playing a video game, whooping it up over strikes on the Houthis, and inviting in the Atlantic journalist Jeffrey Goldberg. You know, he's desperate. He will throw any shiny thing in any direction to get people's attention away from the scandal of that, the consequence of that, and from people saying, how many other Signal groups are out there? How many other times are they doing this unbeknownst to us? Who the hell else are they inviting into these chats, or who else is tapping in? So I think that is the main reason that he brought this up at this time, because it's 3 years down the road. You could say he's softening the ground to make this case, but look, he's going to be 82 in 83 in 2028. You know, does he really think at that stage the decline is obvious? You know,
not to himself. Do you think, Marion, he actually thinks that he's in decline? Of course he doesn't. The man thinks he's omnipotent.
He says a lot of things and initially says, oh, I was just joking. And then it turns out, guess what? He wasn't. I think he's an authoritarian. I think he's a would-be dictator. I think he would be very happy to serve a third term. I don't think he wants to leave office voluntarily, as you say, because he doesn't want to seem like a lame duck, possibly, but also because of his own ego and his own thirst for power. So I think there is a real risk. I think America is sleepwalking at the moment into an authoritarian state. And I don't see, apart from some judges, I don't see the media alert enough to it. I don't see, you have law firms like Paul Weiss caving and rolling over for Trump, disgracefully supine behaviour. I just don't think America is taking the threat to its democracy seriously enough at the moment.
So Carl, is this just a case? Sure, we'll see what happens.
Well, no. I'm always amused that when Republicans win, it's a threat to democracy, but when Democrats win, we're practicing democracy. Look, this is not going to happen. There's not going to be any third term. Ironically, it was Republicans who pushed through the constitutional amendment after four terms by Franklin Roosevelt to limit the president to only two terms. It was George Washington who set the example for this. He could have won a third term very easily, but he set the example by leaving as a very popular president and going home to Mount Vernon. And that has been the precedent all up until the time of Franklin Roosevelt. But it's Republicans who pushed through this constitutional amendment. Trump says, well, there are ways around it. He hasn't told us what they were, which is kind of ironic since Republicans supposedly support the rule of law and a reading of the Constitution as is.
Okay, you say it's fine when Democrats do it, it's wrong when Republicans do it. Two things I say to that. In my lifetime, I don't remember any Democrat ever behaving in the way in office, in the way Trump is. I actually don't even remember a Republican behaving in this way, Cal. And I mean, the sort of the sneer often about Republicans in name only. I would suggest Trump's a Republican in name only. He's something entirely different. The Republican Party, which used to support the conservative values that you like, has been totally taken over and taken apart and rebuilt in a different way. So would you not actually take seriously the potential that all of the things that Trump said he would do in the run-up to the election last year, and everyone said, no, don't mind him, he won't do that, this is all just talk. He's now doing exactly all of this. So why not take his threat to try and have a third term seriously?
Well, here's what a lot of people don't understand, Matt, and possibly with all of your great knowledge, you as well. A lot of Republican voters were tired of electing Republicans to office and seeing nothing change. The debts go up, the taxes go up, the size of government goes up. And they wanted somebody to come in like a bull in a china shop and do something about it. And the polls show that a large and increasing number of American voters are very happy with what Trump is doing in cutting the size of government. That's what been one of the major concerns of Republicans and conservatives over the years. And that's one of the reasons he's so popular. A lot of this other stuff, I think, is just blather. It's not going to happen. It's just Trump being Trump. That's the way they feel.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe it would be a bit more convincing if he was cutting the mega government contracts to Elon Musk and Peter Thiel and others. But when we come back, we need to take a break. I want to talk to you both about the threats to Greenland and by extension to the European Union. That's after this. Okay, Greenland is an issue for the European Union because Greenland is a protectorate of Denmark, a member of the EU. And Mary McKeown, just tell us a little bit about the extraordinary threats essentially being issued by the Trump administration consistently now in recent weeks. Things that sort of resemble the way Putin and Russia was talking about Crimea before the invasion in back in the mid-2010s, and then subsequently, of course, the invasion of Ukraine that we thought would never happen.
Yeah, you know, again, this is something that people initially thought that Trump was joking about when he said we wanted Greenland, or that it was just another flamboyant, you know, Trump headline-making attempt. This is very serious because the fact is that let's look at the Trump has not ruled out military force, and let's look at the reality of this situation. There is already a military base, a US military base in Greenland, which is the one that J.D. Vance ended up going to visit after basically not a single Greenlander would agree to meet his wife, never mind him, and that whole plan had to be scrapped. So they went there anyway to the US military base. There are only 56,000 people, Greenlanders, living in Greenland at the moment. If America decided to invade Greenland, to take it by force, there's very little that they could do to stop it. Now, that would cause havoc because...
Sorry, Denmark, what would the European Union do in response?
Exactly, and this is what I'm going to get to. Greenland is technically part of Denmark, even though it's a self-governing territory, but Denmark gives Greenlanders a lot of money. It's essentially a welfare state that's paid for by Denmark in significant part, but it's got these massive resources and it's strategically, geographically and geopolitically very, very important. So Denmark was one of the founding members of NATO, and the US is also a member of NATO. So are we going to have a situation in theory where one NATO member invades the sovereign territory of another another NATO member, and then what happens with Article 5? So where are we then? If this happens, what does Denmark do? What does the EU do in response? I mean, will it be that, you know, there'll be sanctions on the US, that there'll be some kind of a Cold War, whatever? I don't see a military response, and hopefully there wouldn't be. But this is putting, you know, when you look at J.D. Vance and Trump's contempt for Europe, their act of loathing and hostility towards Europe, they're a lot friendlier to Putin than they are. They hold him in seemingly far higher regard than they do any European leaders. I think we're in a situation here that, again, is really potentially serious. And I think Trump does have this belief that if he can just get hold of Greenland, tap into all their mineral resources, all of their wealth, you know, whatever is there, and also then have it as for strategic military reasons, that, you know, he sees this as like taking candy from a baby. He thinks that America can do this, and America can actually do this. It's the consequences and the fallout that we need to look at.
Okay, Cal Thomas, the United States of America used to have dozens of military bases in Greenland after the Second World War. It has withdrawn all of them bar one. The Danes have made it quite clear that if the United States wanted more military bases on Greenland, it would do a deal with the United States to allow them to have it, which would make it seem very suspicious that this is a land grab for minerals and other assets, that this is a form of international theft. So do you think, is that appropriate for your government to be threatening another country with?
Absolutely not, Matt, and I agree with much of what Marion says. And, you know, you mentioned Putin, who also wants to reoccupy the former Soviet states. But there's also, of course, President Xi in Taiwan. He has threatened to invade Taiwan, to take it back, and that would certainly give him a green light, and worse, rob America of whatever moral authority it has about not invading other nations. I think some kind of diplomatic deal can be worked out here, just as the oil companies worked out deals with various other countries for drilling permits and sharing wealth. I mean, okay, let's see what we can do. Let's negotiate with Denmark on not just more bases, but also the mineral rights. Let's pay them something. Let's pay the Greenlanders something for the privilege of assessing some of those rights. The threat of military action, I think, is really, really bad. I hope it doesn't happen. And I think if it does, it could possibly lead to an impeachable offense.
But Carl, you say a deal can be worked out. But again, what's happening here seems to be that Trump is bullying, or America is bullying everybody. And going in and then saying, you're going to have to concede to us. And then, okay, we won't take everything that we want off you, but you're going to have to give us something. Are there not consequences from that, and that this is going to create an enormous resentment in the rest of the world against America? And you will eventually pay a price for that.
I agree, Matt. There was a book written many years ago called The Ugly American. And I think a movie was made out of it. And it was about the bad behavior of a lot of American tourists overseas and the things that some of our government were doing. We may be the greatest nation on earth, but a lot of humility ought to go along with that. What makes America great? It's not just our economy. It's not our military might. It's not of these other things. It has always been some kind of moral foundation that we can define the evils of communism as opposed to freedom. Reagan made a great speech in the British Parliament in, I think, his second term about the blessings and the joy of freedom and how we stand behind freedom and human rights. This is one of Jimmy Carter's major thing on human rights, and he was absolutely right about it. If we abandon that moral authority, then what's left except military power, which is nothing more than what the communists and the other totalitarians are about.
Marion, tell us about people getting deported because they have the wrong tattoos, about green card holders getting deported even when they're married to American citizens, getting deported in error and then been allowed to stay in foreign prisons because the Americans say then there's no legal mechanism to bring them back.
Well, we've seen, and specifically to that case, a young father of a five-year-old disabled child who's married to an American citizen. His child is an American citizen, and he was picked up wrongly. He was sent to El Salvador. He's now in that hellhole in El Salvador. And ICE went, whoops, our bad. Yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that to him, but too late now. He's gone and there's no mechanism to get him back. That's just one example. There's another 23-year-old makeup artist who came from Venezuela, a young guy, but involved in a lot of campaigns. I know people who actually know him, said he's just this really sweet young guy. He left Venezuela because he was openly gay and he was terrified that he would be persecuted or that his life would be in danger as a result. He certainly wasn't a gang member, but he had tattoos like nearly every kid under 30 has tattoos at this stage in America. And some ICE guy decided that because he had a tattoo, ergo, he was a member of one of the Venezuelan gangs. And he was deported to El Salvador as well with no hearing, no due process. And now this young guy who fled Venezuela out of terror of being, because he was gay, out of the response to that, is now in this savage place in El Salvador where this prison, where is he even still alive? Who knows? And God only knows what he's going through if he is. And this is, you know, about 113,000 people have been arrested now in the last couple of months. And ICE claims that they've carried out more than 100,000 deportations. But there's been no due process with so many of these. People are being sent to prisons in countries they don't come from, that they've never been to, that they've no connection with, to these brutal hellholes for no reason, on a whim, without any proof that they are. And many, ICE has admitted that many of them have no criminal records. They've never done anything wrong in the States. This is just...
It's on the basis of ethnic and racial profiling, yeah, which has...
It's echoes
of Europe in the 1930s.
Yeah.
Two things to finish. Carl, I want to ask you about Paula White Kane. Who is she?
Well, she is Trump's faith advisor. She's my view is, if you need a faith advisor, you probably don't have much faith to begin with. She has now put out this fundraising letter. She asking people to donate money to her so-called ministry, $1,000 before Easter. So there's a timeline. And in exchange, you're going to get these special blessings, which include an angel who is an enemy of your enemies, which is contradicting to Jesus' command to love your enemies, and a whole bunch of other things. I mean,
how much money are you giving her, Carl? So will you stay with the 1,000 or make a bigger donation?
No, I think I've got to save my donations for more worthy causes. But she is a heretic. A heretic is somebody who departs from the traditional teachings of one churches. She's a lunatic. She said during the 2020 race that two angels were coming, one from Africa and one from South America, to guarantee the election of Donald Trump. And I say in my column, they must have been held up by TSA for special screening. They didn't make it in time.
But hold on a second.
They might be in El Salvador.
Yeah, but this grifter, this woman, this latest grifter, I mean, is this not just another example that the whole Trump enterprise is a giant grift and a giant scam? So you have the likes of White Kane in there looking for money donations. You have Elon Musk going in, slashing government spending at a time when he is taking enormous amounts of money out of the American government for his pet projects like SpaceX. This is a gigantic grift.
Well, SpaceX is working, as you see, with the return of those stranded astronauts. But I would also mention that Trump is still selling on radio ads his watches. And it begins by, "This is your favorite president, Donald Trump," urging people to buy his watches. Actually, I was thinking of getting one for both you and Marion for your next birthdays.
Right. To finish with you, Marion, though, tell us about a development in the case of Luigi Mangone, the man who is accused of the shooting dead of the chief executive of a health insurance company earlier this year. Brian Thompson. Marion, you still there?
Oh,
we seem to have dropped Mary. Because this is Pam Bondi, the U.S. Attorney General, has directed prosecutors to seek the death penalty for Mangone, Cal.
Well, she is within her rights to do so. And this man was the head of United Healthcare, one of the biggest insurance companies in the country. What has been interesting to me, among other things, is the number of people who have come out in support of Mangione. I mean, the man allegedly committed murder in the streets of New York City in a morning, and the man has two daughters and a wife, although I guess they're estranged or were. And I'm just amazed at the support of a guy who was accused of murder. Bondi is within her rights to...
She is, but Carl, I suppose the thing is, you know, if Mangione is convicted of the crime, do you still, but would executing him bring back his victim? Does it act as a deterrent in the United States to other people killing people if you start have the death penalty for murderers?
Well, Matt, I'm writing a column about a particular case in Tennessee on this, and I'm rethinking my whole position on the death penalty. I according to one study I read, 4.1% of people on death row are innocent. And I think killing one innocent person through the death penalty is far worse than commuting to life in prison without parole all of the others. So, but this seemed, the video evidence seemed so clear on this. And, you know, the humanitarian view of punishment, as C.S. Lewis wrote about, is that you don't, a life for a life is equal. Simply depriving someone of liberty for taking a life is not equality.
Cal Thomas, Marion McKeown, thank you both so much.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.